Now, in practice, there was considerable tension within the League between traditional forces and more radical forces, and outcomes tended to vary. In towns where nobiliary League governors gained the upper hand, it was established families of notables and other aristocrats who retained power and continued to perform their local functions. On the other hand, where the newer town councils remained in control, especially in Paris, the League did resemble a federation of independent cities, and the nobility had a role only as an adjunct, a necessary adjunct, but a suspect adjunct at the same time. Caught in the middle of this restructuring of politics, in a sense, were the magistrates in the Ligue Parlement. They were devout Catholics, but they were torn by their respect for the legitimacy of royal government on the one hand, and their animosities toward the lower ranks of the legal profession on the other. As these Catholic towns experienced an unprecedented independence from the monarchy, and the consequent emergence of social tensions long buried within the commercial and legal professions, events moved quickly in the national struggle between the Catholic League, the Crown of France, and the Huguenots. Henry III was caught in a really awkward kind of dilemma. He had been declared deposed by the theology faculty of the University of Paris. He was expelled from his own capital. It was an embarrassing position to be in for a monarch. Henry badly needed some kind of ally, and a powerful ally at that. But it was really impossible for him to reconcile with the Duke of Mayenne, since he had assassinated Mayenne's brothers, and moreover, retribution from the papacy was certain, and at the same time, the mass of the lower clergy continued to denounce the king as a heretic. It was equally impossible for Henry III to ally with the extreme Huguenots, because the concessions that they would demand from him would almost certainly alienate most of the kingdom and put Henry in an even worse position than he had been before. There was really only one alternative, and that was to make an alliance with, above all people, Henry of Navarre, who himself was already throwing out peace feelers to the monarchy. In April of 1589, the two Henrys, as they came to be called, Henry of Navarre and Henry III the King, signed a truce. They merged their armies together, and they marched on Paris and laid siege to the city, which went into a kind of frenzy, a religious frenzy of rage against the monarch. And this frenzy and this rage soon had striking consequences. On the 1st of August, 1589, a young Franciscan friar by the name of Jacques Clément slipped out of the city. He entered the royal camp, claiming that he had an urgent message for King Henry III from the royal supporters in the city. When he was admitted to Henry's presence, it turned out that there was no message at all. Instead, Clément drew a poisoned knife from his sleeve and repeatedly stabbed the king. A few hours later, Henry III died, assassinated by his own people, and one of his last acts was to recognize Henry of Navarre as his heir. At this point, it would seem that Henry of Navarre is in a rather good position. He is, after all, the best genealogical heir to the throne. He's been recognized by the former king, and he's got a really powerful claim. But nonetheless, his Protestant faith deterred a great many Frenchmen from accepting him. Indeed, the royal army outside of Paris, which had started off at a strength of about 40,000, dropped to less than half that strength really quickly, as many people deserted rather than serve a Protestant monarch. And therefore, Henry of Navarre found himself committed to a long, protracted, and painful siege. It is true that Navarre succeeded in defeating Mayenne twice in Normandy, but despite defeating the Catholic League in the field, and despite rivalry between its own leaders, the League remained strong while it continued to hold so many cities throughout the kingdom. And in this respect, I think it's important to see that the League rather resembles the position of the Huguenots themselves in the early 1560s. The crown can defeat them in the field, but if they're entrenched in the cities, and if they have enough popular support, the fundamental source of strength remains in place. Henry's siege of Paris caused enormous suffering for the city's people. Since he was not strong enough to just storm the city walls by force, Henry resolved to starve Paris into submission. Famine and disease claimed a great many lives, and actually we know from a diary which was kept inside the city by a man by the name of Pierre de l'Étoile, who actually supported Henry of Navarre, that situations got so extreme that it was proposed to disinter the dead and grind up their bones, and from that to make flour and bake it and give it to the people to survive. Despite this enormous physical suffering, however, it's fairly clear that the resistance of the people of Paris was upheld largely by the clergy, by organizing fiery sermons and carrying out dramatic ecclesiastical processions. Morale remained strong despite so many people dying of plague and of hunger. Finally, the situation was resolved from the outside. In August of 1590, a Spanish army led by the Duke of Parma came down from Flanders, from the border with the Netherlands, and it forced Henry to break off the siege. Paris was saved.